From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 19th day of November, 2025. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson at TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. We'll discuss a new invasive weed that has come into the state of Illinois. We'll do that with Catherine Seabrook. She's from the northwestern part of Illinois and with U of I Extension. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast, too, with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Along the way, I remind you to visit our website at willag.org, willag.org, where you can find daily information on the markets and the weather, as well as updated content from the Ag Economist, the Weed Scientist, and the Animal Scientist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Oh, and you can also sign up for the Farm Assets Conference. It's coming up on the 12th day of December at the Agri Center in Bloomington. We've got a day-long event that has some really good information on it. You want to get yourself signed up right now. The cost is just $80, including your noon hour meal. Join us in Bloomington on December the 12th at the Agri Center. Now let's turn our attention to the Closing Market Report right here on Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, where? At willag.org. That's willag.org. No update of the numbers from the CME Group today as I'm traveling towards Kansas City. Greg Johnson now joins us. Thanks, Greg, for being with us. He's with TGM and TotalGrainMarketing.com. As you and I are talking in the 11 o'clock hour today, the markets are lower. Can you give me some reasons why?
Well, I think the main reason is we've gone up a buck and a half in the last month, and I think we're just seeing a little bit of a pause, a little bit of profit-taking. Farmers are rewarding this market a little bit. Beans well over $11 times the type the yields that we had in our area anyway work out to a profitable number. So farmers are taking advantage of that on the beans. Corn, we didn't see the yield drop that we normally would or that we would have liked to have seen from the USDA last week. I think traders are still thinking that eventually, and come January when that report comes out, that the government will lower that corn yield. And so it feels like farmers are willing to hold on to corn and wait for better market, better prices. But beans, we're seeing an uptick in farmer selling as they reward this $11 plus market.
Well, two things then. First one, I think, is a quick question. Are farmers selling new crop soybeans too?
We think they should start at $11 cash, which would be like $11.30 futures. And we got there just barely. So if people had offers in, they were able to sell $11 beans. Since then, we've sold off a little bit, but I still maintain and, you know, urge farmers to put in $11 offers. And when it gets there, even if it's only there for a second or two, you can get your offer filled. And why not start at $11 and hope that's your worst sale for this coming year? Because this year, we spent a lot of time in the $9 to $10 range. It just now recently got to 11. So why not start with 11 and hope that's your lowest sale for next year?
And secondly, you told me that they're not selling old crop corn. Do you think there is a better price in the future?
I do. We've had a nice 40-cent rally here in October, November. We may not see much more. We may go sideways for the rest of November, December. But I think as we get into January, February, we could go higher, make another leg higher. Two reasons. One, I do think the USDA will come down on that corn yield eventually. And number two, the input costs are relatively high for planting corn. And so farmers may cut back on corn unless they're given an incentive to plant corn next year. And that incentive would be a higher price. So between the higher input costs and the fact that maybe the yield needs to come down on the old crop estimate a little bit, I think those are two reasons that we could see higher prices. But both of those may not happen till January, February. So November, December could be sideways, but I do think there still is another leg higher in the corn market.
Anecdotally, and I don't know whether this matters in East Central Illinois as it's related to rotation, but because there were nearly 100 million acres of corn planted, do you think that corn acreage number will drop back to something that is closer to normal in the 90 to 92 million acres next year or something higher than that?
Probably higher than that. I mean, we could come down 2 to 3 million acres, but the I states, the Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, area, we're pretty much on a 52% corn, 48% soybean rotation. It would take some extreme numbers to get farmers to switch out of the rotation. I think we can see acres shift out of corn into beans or wheat or whatever in some of the peripheral states, the Dakotas, the Missouris, the Kentuckys, but where they can't grow 240, 250 bushel corn. It's hard to justify the high inputs when you can only spread it out over 200 bushels an acre. But if you can spread it out over 250 bushels an acre, it's a little bit more easier to justify planting corn even with the higher input costs. So I guess I don't see the yield or the acres coming down tremendously, not 5 million acres like we did back in 2014, but I could see it dropping 2 to 3 million acres next year.
And finally, because you mentioned you thought higher prices could come in January, that also would be the first time the producers might really make more sales. I take it you don't believe there'll be a wall of corn coming at that point.
I think the exports, if the USDA is right, exports are going to stay strong. Ethanol demand is going to stay strong. The one thing I would caution people against is even if they do lower the yield, they may take that as an opportunity to lower the feed demand. That feed demand number looks entirely too high, in my opinion. So if they lower the yield by 3 bushels an acre, let's say, they may use that as an opportunity to lower the feed demand also. So we still may have a 1.9, 2.0 billion bushel corn carryout, but at least it gets the yield down and may give us a short opportunity, a short window to get something priced.
Mm-hmm. Greg Johnson is with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. On this day, November 19, in 1863, President Abraham Lincoln delivered the Gettysburg Address. The Civil War had entered its third year, and for 3 days, more than 90,000 soldiers from the Army of the Potomac and about 75,000 troops from the Army of Northern Virginia had fought at a crossroads in Pennsylvania's fruit-growing hill country. The clash between the Union and Confederate soldiers in the market town of Gettysburg stands as the largest land battle ever fought in the Western Hemisphere. On this day in history, President Abraham Lincoln came to the site to consecrate a cemetery in their honor. The brief Gettysburg Address marked a defining moment in the Civil War. 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we're engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives, that that nation might live. It's altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far above our power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. The Gettysburg Address was delivered by Abraham Lincoln on November the 19th, 1863. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget to visit our website at willag.org, where right now you can sign up for the Farm Assets Conference and the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Our theme music today is written, performed, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Now up next, University of Illinois Extension educator Catherine Seabrook tells us more about a new invasive weed in the state of Illinois and some of its history here in the United States.
So this new weed species is called Asian copperleaf. It has been found actually in Stevenson County up in northwest Illinois. This is the first instance of it being found in the state of Illinois, so definitely a hot topic. It has been found, the first instance of it being found in the United States was in 1990 in New York, actually, in New York City. And then from there, it was first found again in 2016 in the state of Iowa. And between 2016 and 2025, the folks at Iowa State University Extension have had their eyes on it and have tracked it, and it has since been spreading, or has spread to 8 different counties in Iowa before it now has entered into Illinois.
Is it very much of a problem in those counties in Iowa at this point, do you know?
There isn't a lot of, you know, strict data on this besides just anecdotal reports because this is so new. Field research is in the early stages. I will say that in the counties that it has been found, it is typically being detected during harvest. So farmers, as they're taking down their crop canopies, they're discovering this carpet of weeds in their fields, and they have found that it is, in fact, Asian copperleaf. So it does have a bit of an ability to spread, but again, that strict data and research is still forthcoming.
You did say also that it does show up early in the season, too, so it must be germinating more than once during the season, I would think.
Yeah, there is definitely potential for that because, yes, just like you said, there are reports of seedlings emerging during the planting season in about that April to May time frame. So that, coupled with the fact that it is typically also being detected at harvest, does tell us that maybe it does have multiple flushes of germination throughout the growing season.
Because we called this an invasive species, it sounds as if it could be very, very bad, but really I think what it means is that it's just not one that's natural to the United States at this point.
Correct. Yeah, there is a distinction between a non-native species and an invasive species. So non-native just means that this is not its natural, normal home range. It is native to, Russia and the Philippines and Japan, and it naturalizes to other areas. So it is non-native to the United States. It is potentially, of course, naturalizing here. We can't necessarily classify it as being invasive yet either, just because there's not enough preliminary information to classify it as such. But the USDA has done a weed risk assessment on this species. Of course, this is a little bit old information back from 2012. And they did find that there are, thus far, no potential excessive weediness or invasive characteristics of the species, thankfully.
Will there be more information yet to come soon?
Yes. So the folks, like I said, at Iowa State have been doing some research, and now that it is in Illinois, there will more than likely be field research forthcoming on that in our state, and we will hopefully be collaborating with the folks at Iowa State University as well. So definitely in this upcoming season, tracking the emergence of the species. We've talked about how it's been detected at harvest, but also during early on in the growing season. So we want to do some, more hard and fast data on that to determine, are there multiple flushes of germination? When is it typically germinating? Things of that nature. So yes, definitely more information upcoming.
What are some of the identifying characteristics of this particular weed so that should a farmer have seen something in their field that they didn't recognize this fall or maybe next spring, they might be able to figure that out? And do they need to let University of Illinois Extension know?
Yeah, that's a great question. So this weed species is actually, it doesn't have characteristics that are super stark, let's say. So at first glance, kind of in its early growing stages, it looks a little bit actually like water hemp does. It kind of has those lanceolate leaves and some serrated edges of their leaves, but when they're seedlings, every plant is very difficult to identify when it's a seedling. Its cotyledons are very round, which is distinct from water hemp cotyledons. They are, of course, very lanceolate and oblong. But later on, once the plant has established its flowering features, it does look a little bit more, it's a little bit easier to identify, as with most plants. Interestingly enough, its flowers actually just look like leaves. So not a very showy plant by any means. And there is going to be information forthcoming that will provide a lot of really good information about how to properly identify the species. And if you do, once that information is out there and you think you have have found this plant in your fields, we highly encourage you to reach out to your local extension agent, whether it's an educator or specialist, to get some help with some proper identification so we can confirm those reports and get those documented for, you know, so that we have a central location of information to be able to report out where this is being located and how much it is spreading, if at all.
Catherine Seabrook is the University of Illinois Extension educator in the northwestern part of the state. Let's check in on the weather forecast now for the growing regions across the planet. Drew Lerner now joins us. Drew is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, where I will be tomorrow. I hope the weather where you are, Drew, is nice. Is that right? Are you gray and kind of cooler too?
Oh, for where we ought to be in November, this is fantastic. Yeah, I think it'll be a coolish day, but you said tomorrow, right?
I did indeed.
Here tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah, you know, tomorrow's going to be a nice day for the most part. I don't think there's going to be any reason for you to be concerned. It's not going to be quite as balmy as it has been. We do have the risk of rain coming up tomorrow night, so it looks like tomorrow night into Friday, kind of rainy across a big part of the lower Midwest and part of the central and southern plains, all part of a couple of storms that are headed in those areas.
Well, let's just start with the Midwest and talk about the weather forecast. What does it look like for the hard red winter wheat growing regions? I said Midwest, but that would be soft red. I want to go out closer to where you live.
Yeah, that rain that I just mentioned for the Kansas City here in the lower Midwest does come from a disturbance in California and Arizona that will bring rain to Texas and Oklahoma and parts of southern Kansas, and that will occur tomorrow into Friday. We do expect the precipitation to be concentrated on the Texas-Oklahoma area, but there will be a little bit of rain that comes northward, and that'll probably occur on Thursday night going into Friday. And then that system will go ahead and roll across the lower parts of the Midwest, so the Ohio River Basin will get another rain event, very similar to what occurred yesterday, maybe a little bit lighter on the rainfall this time around. Now, there's a second disturbance coming into California, and that'll occur on Friday, and it'll end up bringing a new wave of moisture into hard red winter wheat areas, and that will occur as we go from Saturday into Sunday, might even linger a little bit into Monday as well. And that system will also head to the lower Midwest, the Delta and the Tennessee River Basin area. So some disruption to late season farming activity expected in all these areas, but the moisture is going to be good for wheat, especially those areas that got kind of cheated out of moisture earlier in the year.
Turn your attention to more northern climes, and I think this is correct. There is a system there that's warming across parts of Alaska, Canada, I suppose. And that's going to dump a lot of cold air into the Midwest. Can you tell me about it?
Yes, this is part of that hyped up stratospheric warming event that was all over the media this past weekend and has been impacting the polar vortex. And we're going to see this cold air working its way southward through North America as we go forward into the latter part of the weekend and early part of next week. Now, there will be some cold that will come southward before then, but it's going to get stopped at the Canada border or just over the border and be stuck up there for a little while. We'll have to wait for a reinforcing shot of cold air to come along during the first half of next week to push it deeper into the north central U.S. But as we get out towards the Thanksgiving holiday, that cold will be pushing into the north central U.S. and the northwestern states. But it's going to get hung up again. And so if you're going to be in the eastern part of the United States, you're probably going to have some coolish weather, but nothing extremely cold all the way through that Thanksgiving holiday. And it'll be somewhere late in the first week and probably the second week of December for the eastern part of the U.S. to get involved with cold. In the meantime, it'll get a lot colder in the north central and, well, the central states in general.
Farmers in the northern hemisphere are looking to the southern hemisphere, and they're rooting for something if it doesn't even develop, but to be on the forecast that might cause issues with soybean production in Brazil and Argentina. Or are they going to find something?
You know, it's always good to be a cheerleader, but in this case, I don't know. I may be just barking up the wrong tree. We have seen some dryness in the northern part of Brazil that's been kind of puzzling and interesting at the same time. We just haven't had good, solid, soaking, generalized rains across the northern half of the production region this spring so far. And there's a lot of dryness in the subsoil still. Some of the topsoil was dry until about a week ago, and we're starting to fill in some of those gaps. The weather is actually going to turn more favorably moist as we get into this coming weekend and on into most of next week. And so all of these drier biased areas in northern Brazil will be getting a decent drink of water. And, you know, we're early enough in the growing season that, yeah, the crop is probably not doing the best. But with this rain kicking in at this point in the growing season, I think there's a pretty good chance that many of these soybeans that are a little behind and a little stressed are going to, you know, take full advantage of the rain and really come around. So I'm looking for a lot of improvement to take place as we move from this weekend into next week. In the meantime, southern Brazil's been plenty wet, if not a little too wet. And they're going to go the other way. So we'll see a little bit of a drier bias for a while. This is getting to look a little bit more like, not Christmas, but like a traditional La Nina. And La Nina is intensifying as I speak, and it is going to have a little bit more control on South America's weather in December. But it's working at the same time that a normal weather pattern is in the background. So we're not going to see the kind of droughts that we've had in the past when La Nina evolves, but we will see less rain for a little while.
Okay, so that was my next question, because I know La Nina, once they evolve, can impact Argentina particularly. But it sounds like you're not convinced that's going to be the case either.
Yeah, you know, the computer forecast model suggests this La Nina event will weaken greatly as we finish December and move into January. And if that's the case, then we're only going to have a few weeks of drier biased weather. And that's not going to be long enough to get the ground critically dry. In this particular year, we don't have a lot of heat coming into Argentina. The first half of December will actually be cooler than usual. So without the rain, the cooler bias is going to conserve that moisture in the subsoil, and they probably will get along okay. They're going to have some stress, but it's not going to be a drought. And it is, you know, the past few La Ninas that we've had, Argentina was in a dry weather mode before La Nina arrived. And so La Nina came along and made it into a big, bad drought. But traditionally, that's not what La Nina does. La Nina will reduce the rain in eastern Argentina, but if you're in a normal or even a wetter than normal weather pattern and La Nina comes around, you're going to see a reduction in precipitation, but you're probably going to still get timely rain. So this is going to be more like that rather than like the last three La Ninas that we've had in Argentina. And I think that if we're looking for a big bad drought, you're going to be surprised it's not going to happen.
Well, we are looking for something, but maybe not a big bad drought. We'll find out again next week whether things have changed. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
You bet. Have a good holiday.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, for the good of all. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.